Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf field specialist based at Alimint, and will be your host for this episode, in which we'll be discussing the 2022 beef quality audit. I am excited to have Sydney Borders on this episode. Sydney was heavily involved in the 2022 beef quality audit, so I'm excited about what she has to share with us today. So, Sydney, to just kick off this episode, will you share a little bit about yourself and how you were involved in the beef quality audit in 2022?
Yes, ma'am. So my name is Sydney Borders. I am from Texas originally, and I'm here at South Dakota State University now pursuing a PhD. But my story kind of starts with my master's degree. Actually, I attended Texas A&M University and got my bachelor's there. I decided school was so much fun that I was pursued a master's in meat science. And through that, I was actually one of the lead researchers on the National Beef Quality Audit of 2022. My baby, or my sole responsibility, was specifically the cow and bull sector of the National Beef Quality Audit. So I've done the trips and I've been there, feet on the ground, for the entire audit. And so it's really cool to be able to, now that it's done, talk about it and share it with others.
Well, we are excited you're joining us, because sometimes we don't always get the person that's boot on the grounds, and you're the person we want to talk to. So I know the audit is actually held about every 4 to 5 years. I know it varies a little bit, but can you share some history about the audit and really why was it established?
Right. So the first ever National Beef Quality Audit was actually conducted in 1991. And it only looked at the fed steer and heifer side of things. So the first market cow and bull audit actually wasn't conducted until 1994. And that's because, you know, we realized that, hey, a large portion of the U.S. beef industry does come from market cows and bulls. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize even to this day. And so from there, as you said, you know, they've been conducted around approximately every 5 years. Now, with the pandemic this year, we weren't quite able to follow that trend, because we had a hard time, you know, getting into plants and things of that nature. But basically, the whole purpose of the National Beef Quality Audit is to monitor what we're marketing. So, you know, you can't manage what you don't monitor. And so we do this every 5 years, and we do it nationally just to kind of take a snapshot of the U.S. beef industry and what it's looking like and what improvements we can make. And what improvements we have made, you know, to kind of see where we've been and where we're going in order to continue to produce a safe, wholesome product that our consumers love.
You just mentioned there's the fed cattle side of things. There's the cow and bull sector side of things. Can you share a bit more on the details of what an audit includes? Because I know there's different phases, if you'd like to call it that.
Yes, of course. So the National Beef Quality Audit actually has three phases. So phase one are what we call industry interviews. And so that was kind of conducted by Colorado State. They were the main leaders on that one, where they went and took the survey, and it's more on the retailer side of things. So they interviewed, you know, anywhere from packers to government trade organizations, to retailers, restaurant owners, things of that nature, and just kind of saw what their perception was of the U.S. beef industry. And so then phase two is the part that I was heavily involved in, and that was the part that Texas A&M was in charge of, and that is the in-plant portion of the audit. So that's where we go into the plants. We collect data on the cattle that are actually coming through the plants and looking for those different types of quality defects and things of that nature. And so that within itself has different three separate sectors. So within phase two, there's the fed side. So where you look at the fed steer and heifer. And then a part of that, which is the second portion, is the instrument grading. So a lot of beef these days are being graded with cameras. And so it's collecting the data from the cameras that the beef is being graded with, in addition to go ahead and doing the old school, as some like to call it, visual grading. And then the third part of that is the market cow and bull sector. So it's an audit of all of the market cows and bulls that are coming in. And then the last phase of the National Beef Quality Audit is actually what we call strategy session. And it's where we meet at NCBA headquarters in Denver, and we take everything that we've learned, everything that they gathered from phase one and phase two. And we meet with industry stakeholders, leaders within the industry, producers, and we try to pinpoint, you know, this is what we've seen and this is what's causing it. So this is how we're going to fix it. So that's a lot, but it is a big project. So
it is a big project. It takes a lot of time and effort. That's why it's approximately every 5 years, right? It just doesn't happen overnight. But I kind of want to dive a bit more into the phase two where you said it's in plant. So how many plants did you guys actually audit for, let's say, the fed heifer and steer side? How many plants do you audit during that time frame?
Okay, so there's some overlap because some plants actually do both bulls and or cow and bull and fed and steer. But for the fed and steer side solely, we did 22 plants, and that's across the nation. And it's actually really cool because it is a collaborative effort. And so there were, I believe, 12 collaborating universities, including South Dakota State, that helped collect data all across the nation from these different plants.
Wow, that's a lot of plants, a lot of data. And you got to be involved with, I'm assuming, also the analysis of that data. So I think that's maybe what we'll jump into next. And can you share some of the things that were noticed or challenges that were shared or seen in the 2022 beef quality audit?
Yes. So there are a lot of things that are covered in the National Beef Quality Audit, but just to kind of hit some high points, one thing that continues to be an issue that we're seeing a lot of is bruising. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what's causing the bruising, and this is observed on both the fed, steer, and heifer side, as well as the market cow and bull. Some people can attribute it to, you know, cattle handling methods. It can be attributed to facility design. It could just be attributed to genetics. You know, our cattle tend to be getting bigger, you know, and some we're using older facilities. And so, you know, they're too big for some of these things. They're hitting their backs on things. One thing that I noticed, you know, with my boots on the ground, was that especially unloading and unloading trailers, in those pots, they have, you know, different decks. And sometimes as the cattle are running out or into a trailer, they'll jump up and they'll scrape their back on that door, or they'll scrape their back on the deck, and then they'll do it the same thing at the harvest facility. So one thing that we did notice with the bruising that's not actually reflected in the data because of the way that the data was collected was that a lot of the bruising is actually located right on the spine, on the top line of those animals, which is a big issue from the meat side of things, because when you have bruises on a carcass, those things have to be trimmed out. And so if you're trimming out right along that top line, that's where your ribeye sits. And so that kind of becomes a huge concern.
That is a huge concern because that is one of our highest quality meat that, you know, obviously is the highest value. And so that is a big issue. I know we had a conversation about that in one of our earlier meetings about how hopefully those are the things you noticed was along the back line. And obviously that's probably through transport, as you said, because I think you had mentioned to me too that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of that bruising probably is being done within 24 to 48 hours prior to slaughter. Is that correct?
Yes. So most of the bruises observed in the quality audit are fresh bruises. Just like when humans get bruised, cattle get bruised, and as a bruise ages, it, you know, it gets more yellow in color. The bruises that were observed on the kill floor were fresh. So they had to occur within 48 to 72 hours prior to slaughter.
72 hours. Wow. So what are... to kind of go back just a little bit. So that is one of the things you've noticed in this 2022 audit. But as you look back in history, so you said it started in 1991 with the fed heifers and steers, and then on the market bulls and cows, it started in 1994, which I did not know that. Actually, that's something I did not know. From things that you found in history, are there things that are starting to reoccur again? So in the earlier days, we'd noticed, you know, a lot of more carcass issues and blemishes and fat and injection site lesions and things like that. And as we've moved forward, we're looking more, you know, as you've done these audits, the audits are showing even more like animal welfare and where those animals are raised and how they're raised, you know. So it's kind of transitioning from the carcass to how, you know, animal welfare. But obviously, I think there's still some things that happened in 1991 that are fortunately coming back around. Is that true?
Yes, that's kind of true. Historically, there have been some mobility issues. And especially on, you know, the fed steer and heifer side, it's more related to them being too big for their bone structure. Whereas like on the cow and bull side, it's more seen as like, you know, they're older animals, so they're just not as mobile as they used to be. So we've seen, you know, we still had a very high percentage of animals that came through with good mobility scores. So I don't want to discredit the industry anywhere for that. But that is something that we do need to keep in mind of, because even though we did see a very high percentage, it was still a decreased percentage from what was observed in 2016. Another thing that's come up more on the retail side of things is the food safety issue of finding foreign objects in food. So all of the plants that were surveyed, this is actually a new thing that we did in the audit this year, is where we conducted a food safety survey just to kind of pinpoint what the plants are seeing specifically as they pertain to foreign objects, because foreign objects are something that if that's found in meat, that makes national news. And then we as an industry, we all look bad. And so all of the plants that we audited reported finding foreign objects, specifically birdshot, buckshot, any type of shot. And that was an issue, even though it wasn't included in the 1991 audit, that was an issue that did plague the industry around the late 1990s, early 2000s, if I remember back right. It's kind of before my time, but
I hate to say that was my time. So yes, yeah, you are right.
right.
So the early 2000s, yes, buckshot, birdshot was a concern. And so that just totally fascinates me that it's back. In our audit in 2022.
Right. Well, and that just could be a reflection of this is the first year that we've looked at it, but all of the plants reporting findings of buckshot, like that's not good. That's kind of an issue, you know? And so that's just something, you know, those plants are implementing preventative controls. So that way, you know, that doesn't end up in national news, but if we can do stuff on the production size to reduce those instances even further, I mean, that's just adding more security for us as an industry, and helping enhance the public perception of our products.
Absolutely. And that starts at the cow-calf level, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So I also know one of the findings in the 2022 audit was, this is on the market cow side of things, so is full udders. So can you share more on what you saw when it came to cows with full udders coming through the plants? And what does that mean?
Yes, absolutely. So a full udder is considered a defect, or it was for the audit, because it actually poses a problem at the plant level. So one, it's a welfare issue because, you know, if you've seen a cow with a full udder, especially a dairy cow, they look like they're in pain. It can cause mobility issues because, you know, they have a hard time walking when their bag is that full. But from the plant standpoint of things, you know, that has to be removed. And what a lot of people don't realize is that there's something in the food safety side of meat science that's called FMI. And plants have a zero tolerance for FMI. And FMI stands for feces, milk, or ingesta. So if any of those things end up on a carcass, that's kind of deemed as contamination and it has to be trimmed away. So because of that, you know, those full bags, they spew with the cows just walking. And so when you're trying to cut it off of an animal, I mean, it becomes a huge issue because one, it's massive. It's hard to get off. It's not an easy task. And then two, you know, you risk that chance of contamination. So it's just kind of not ideal for both the cow and the packer. So a lot of producers don't realize that it's a contaminant. Milk is a contaminant. And, you know, I don't know the full story on all of those cows, but we saw about 75% of all cows coming through had a full udder at the time of harvest. And I don't know if that's because, you know, they were dropped off the night before and they stood there all day, or, you know, if the producer waited till the afternoon to take her to the plant. But either way, she was marketed during lactation. And so that's something that we want to try to avoid. Additionally, as that kind of ties in, I know I'm sorry, I'm getting a little long-winded here, but
No, keep on going.
Okay. As that ties in, you know, the current audit on the market cap and bulls side saw a decrease in body condition, a pretty significant decrease in body condition. And so, you know, we're coming off of a year that was drought inflicted, so that was probably why. But also on top of that, if a cow's in lactation, she's not gaining condition, and that's probably why we saw such poor body condition too. So
that makes a lot of sense there when you put those two together. If you had low body condition score and a lot of cows coming in with full udders, you are absolutely right. They're not going during lactation. Gaining weight is very challenging. So
right.
Not impossible, but very challenging. So,
right.
So as we, I did not, I asked the question about how many plants were in the fed steer and heifer side, and you said approximately 22 with some overlap with the market cow and bull. But when it comes to the market cow and bull, how many plants did you actually audit for that?
So that was 20 plants.
20 plants.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Again, a lot of data.
Yes.
It just blows my mind. You had mentioned earlier in the podcast too of this episode that a lot of people don't understand or realize the percentage of the market cows and bulls that actually enter the retail space per se, that it's actually showing up on plates in people's restaurants. What percentage is that?
The exact percent of market cows and bulls being killed or...
Yeah, that are being killed and are, well, yeah, I guess basically if they're being killed, I should explain myself better here.
Right.
Yeah. What percentage of the market cows and bulls are being killed? Because in reality, they're ending up on the plates, you know, people's
right.
kitchen
right.
tables or restaurants and things like that. So what percentage
right.
of it is that?
So every retailer, every restaurant is different. I can't give you a definitive answer for that. I can tell you that market cow and bull beef ends up at a lot of fast food establishments. So, you know, a lot of it does get ground and, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of producers, even when they market a cow or a bull, they're like, well, ground beef, you know, and that is true. But, you know, these animals, especially dairy cows, grade very well. Actually, they marble very well. And so if they meet those requirements, you know, you can see cow or bull, steaks, you know, as long as they fit the ideal visual characteristics and they're in the right age and they grade right, there's a potential that they can be retailed. But for the most part, you know, a lot of market cow and bull meat goes into, you know, restaurant trades. I like to say anywhere where you don't necessarily see your steak before it's cooked. So like cruise lines, anywhere you can get a cheap steak a lot of times is going to be probably more market cow or bull. So that's just something a lot of people don't realize. And a lot of it also gets exported. So, I mean, we're harvesting things like tenderloins, ribeye rolls, chuck roast, all these valuable cuts do come from market cows and bulls.
So you had mentioned the dairy side of things. So, well, while you're doing these audits, especially I'm going to probably say both in the fed cattle side of things and also the market cows and bulls, you're also auditing dairy animals too, right? Because that's beef. And,
yes.
And so,
yes.
So I just wanted the listeners to understand that beef is both our beef breeds and our dairy breeds. It all goes to our end market of meat. So
yes. Yeah. And that's a great point too. Because on the market cow and bull side of things, like most definitely we're going to see dairy cows that are being culled. But what a lot of people don't realize is that fed Holstein steers, fed dairy steers do come in packing plants. We audited one packing plant in California that's all they harvested was fed Holsteins. So it is a huge part of our beef industry. One thing that is pretty cool is that the breed percentages, because we evaluate hide color and try to designate that to a breed. And so there's a Holstein pattern, and then there's solid black that the researchers could designate it as. And, you know, based off of that, we saw similar cow percentages and the percentage of Holstein and the percentage of just solid black hided cows that were coming through. So our cow herd's kind of remaining relatively consistent as far as breed makeup is concerned. But when you look at the fed side of things, we actually saw a decrease in Holstein percentage and fed side of things and an increase in black-headed animals. And so what that's kind of telling me or indicating to me is that, you know, beef on dairy is becoming a huge thing in the U.S. beef industry. And so we've seen lots of beef on dairy crosses that have come through this year's audit. And so that's kind of a cool reflection in the data for all of us nerds out there. But
that beef on dairy is a really, becoming very popular as you listen or visit with dairy producers. The percentage of their Holsteins that are actually bred beef is quite high. And there's only a select percentage that are actually bred to, let's say, back to Holstein. So yeah, it's very interesting. So as we start wrapping up this podcast, Sydney, I just want to ask a question. Is there anything from the 2022 audit that really surprised you?
Yeah, so I've talked a little bit about, you know, seeing the bruising. That was pretty interesting. And the food safety was a big shocker, as well as the milk, the full bags was a huge surprise to all of us. Another thing that surprised me was that we audited to see if the truck drivers were BQA certified when they were dropping off their cattle. And the transportation data for both the fed and the market cow and bull side reflect that these cattle were being transported under recommended conditions. So it was really cool that we got to ask that question. And we found out that over 90% of the truck drivers for the fed side of things were BQA certified. A lot of the big packing plants are actually requiring that now. Whereas in the market cow and bull, it was around 63-64%. And that's because, you know, with the market cow and bull, it's not just commercial truck drivers that are dropping those cows off. It's, you know, local people. So they might not be aware, but seeing that and seeing the strides that we've made since the implementation of the BQA program, Robin, you might know this better than me, but I believe BQA really started going in like the early 2000s is when it got implemented across states.
About the late 90s, but yes, in late that, 90s. Yep. So the beef quality audit started, like you said, in 1991, and then BQA started, you know, a few years after that to help address these challenges that the industry was seeing. So
yes, and that's really cool because as you look at the data and you really start studying it from all the previous audits, you know, for example, injection site lesions were a huge thing in 1999 on the market cow and bull side of things. And as you said, that's kind of when BQA really started up and running. But since then, in 2007 was the next market cow and bull audit. There was a drastic increase in the percentage of animals free of injection site lesions. And today that holds about 96 to 98%. So that's just a great improvement that the industry's seen. And as a result of beef quality assurance programs.
Well, I'm glad you said that because our producers, whether they're cow-calf producers, whether they're feeders at feed yards, they have, you know, it all starts at those levels, right? It starts at the cow-calf operation. And as that animal moves through the segment of the industry, everyone that touches it can have an impact. And and we have seen such a great improvement. We are no longer seeing those injection site lesions and consistency of our product is better, right? And those are all due to our producers doing the right thing.
Right.
And absolutely. So I'm glad you brought up the Beef Quality Assurance Program or BQA. I was just going to kind of end the podcast with that the Beef Quality Assurance Program is a certification program for producers. And it actually can be done either through the National BQA website. There's an online training course, or you can do a face-to-face training. And here in South Dakota, myself, Robin, is the South Dakota BQA coordinator. So if there's ever at any time anyone that's listening to this episode that would like to be BQA certified, please reach out. Sydney is actually a trainer too, so we can get that done for you. But I just want to applaud our producers, applaud our industry for making such great strides and improvement in the product that they're producing. So with that, would you like to share any last comments, Sydney, before we sign off?
One thing that I think still holds true to the quality audit this year was, first actually mentioned in 1994, and it was we as producers need to manage our cattle, monitor them, and market them in a timely manner. And those three M's, as I like to call it, still reign true today. So just moving forward to all of our producers out there, keep those in mind. I'm with you. I definitely want to applaud, all of our producers. We've made great strides as an industry. We've seen improvements in cattle handling, genetics. We just need to keep being great. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Sydney, for joining me today on this episode. This has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until the next episode, the most important thing you can wear is your attitude.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ. Brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.